no sense.
This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. Welcome back to the Relic Radio Show, back with you this Tuesday with another 60 minutes of old-time radio. Start off this time with the Encore Theater, their episode from June 25th, 1946, titled Green Light. After that, it's the Mole Mystery Theater. It's heard on Mystery Playhouse, the Armed Forces Radio Service rebroadcast. It's titled Criminal at Large, first aired April 11th, 1944.
The Shanley Laboratories, producer of penicillin Shanley and Shanley Pharmaceuticals, presents the Encore Theater. The Encore Theater play tonight, Green Light. Our star is Robert Young. Tonight, Shanley Laboratories presents another in a new series of great dramatic programs. Some of our stories are fact, the struggles and accomplishments of great men of medicine. Others are fiction, stories of devotion to an ideal, individual heroism, or great courage. By these programs, Shanley Laboratories would remind you that medical science and progress is not cold, impersonal research or pages of statistics, but a warm human story told in living terms, whether it's the life of one of medicine's immortals or the simple everyday record of service rendered by your own physician. And now, Green Light, starring Robert Young as Dr. Newell Page and with Pedro de Cordoba as Dean Harcourt. Green Light, the story of a doctor.
Newell Page, surgeon, Bay Tree Hospital.
And of a girl.
Phyllis Dexter. I hated Dr. Page. I thought I would always hate him.
The story, too, of a nurse.
Frances Ogilvy, staff, Bay Tree Hospital. I loved Dr. Page. I thought I would always love him.
The story of a woman of great faith and courage.
My mother, Mrs. John Dexter.
And of a great religious man, Dean Harcourt of Trinity Cathedral.
Man's progress in life is not steadily onward. Sometimes he is stopped by something that is bigger and stronger than he. Something he cannot understand and over which he has no control. That's something I like to think of as a red light flashing a halt to the forward surge of his life. And I like to believe there's a power which controls that life, which knows in its infinite wisdom that sometimes man must stop to learn through suffering before going on. For it is as inevitable as time that man progresses to a better future. If not for himself, then through his suffering for his fellow men. When he has learned this, the signal changes, and the green light frees him to resume his inexorable march into eternity.
You have been listening to Dean
Harcourt. Oh, turn it off now, Dr. Page.
What would religion be without music?
There was religion long before there was music.
I'm sorry. The usual greeting for the doctor is, "And how is the little lady this morning?"
And I suppose the usual answer is, "Terrible, doctor."
But since we both are unusual people, I'd say your pulse shows marvelous repose for a patient facing surgery.
You can thank Dean Harcourt for that.
I do. Just as I'm thankful for anything that gives a patient courage and confidence.
A shorter word for courage and confidence is faith.
Whatever it is, you'll need every bit of it now.
More bad news?
Oh, nothing really serious, except that, well, it's not easy to prepare oneself mentally for an operation. Sometimes a postponement can cause a harmful reaction. What I'm trying to say is...
You're trying to tell me my operation has been postponed?
Yes, Dr. Endicott has been detained in Milwaukee. He'll be here as soon as he can.
Milwaukee's a beautiful city. It's always seemed full of music to me. Years ago, we used to go there to hear the community singing.
You make it work, don't you?
No. I simply let it work.
How simple things would be if we all had your faith. I'll let you know about the operation as soon as I possibly can.
I know you will.
Any word of Dr. Endicott yet, Miss Ogilvie?
No, Doctor. They can't seem to locate him.
Here are Mrs. Dexter's x-rays, Newell.
Thanks. Good Lord, look at that. She can't hold out much longer. We've got to do something.
We'll have to wait for Endicott. She's his patient.
We can't postpone this operation any longer. Her life is at stake now. I'll phone surgery.
Are you crazy?
Not unless these x-rays are.
Surgery.
Surgery, this is Dr. Page.
You can't do that. Endicott will...
We'll operate on Mrs. Dexter immediately. Clamp, Miss Ogilvie.
Yes, Dr. Page.
Forceps.
Dr. Page?
Yes, Dr. Endicott.
Thank you, Doctor. If you will assist me, I can take over now.
Yes, sir.
The forceps, Miss Ogilvie. Dr. Page, make a tie, please.
She's bleeding badly.
Quick. Well, I'm afraid that's that. I did everything I could. She shouldn't have died, Newell. You were doing perfect work. If Endicott had been less upset...
I'd rather not talk about it.
I saw exactly what happened, and I'm going to tell everybody the truth.
Don't you think it's Dr. Endicott's privilege to make his own statement first?
Come in.
Hello, Dr. Endicott.
Newell, glad you came in. I've been wanting to talk to you. Sit down. Nasty business, this Dexter death. I've been trying to convince the board of directors that her death was an unavoidable accident. It was unavoidable, wasn't it?
No, sir. For some reason, you cut the pedicle too short for safe ligation. I couldn't make the tie, and the hemorrhage resulted. It should never have happened. The problem now is...
I probably shouldn't have stepped in on the operation, realizing the terrific strain I'd been under. We all love Mrs. Dexter. I felt that her life was my personal responsibility, but all planes had been grounded on account of weather. I've moved heaven and earth to get here in time. I haven't slept in 2 days. Too tired.
I'm sorry, sir.
A split second, woman dies, and a whole career dies with her. A split second is against the 40 years I've given to medicine. I can't be judged on one operation out of thousands, Newell. I can't.
Newell.
Hello, John. What time is it?
Time for you to pull yourself together. Get down to the hospital and tell Endicott and the board where to head in.
I can't do that.
Why not?
What do you want me to do? Stand up before the board and say, dear, dear, kind gentlemen, it doesn't matter to me that Dr. Endicott taught me everything I know about surgery. It doesn't matter that Dr. Endicott is one of the finest surgeons in the country. It doesn't matter how many lives he's saved, how much pain he's eased, how much comfort he's brought. No, none of that's important. Just me. I'm the only one who's important. Big, important Dr. Page.
I know it's tough, Newell, but you've got to protect yourself.
A split second. A woman dies and a career dies with her. That isn't right either. Endicott's a human being, too. He's not infallible.
That's no concern of yours. If you resign, you admit that you were responsible for Mrs. Dexter's death.
Exactly.
Well, that clears Endicott completely.
Right.
Confound it, you sound as if you were going to resign.
I have already.
Dean Harcourt, I'm Frances Ogilvie. I was the nurse on the... I was Mrs. Dexter's nurse.
Oh, I see.
She always listened to your broadcast, and I had to talk to someone, so... You see, I know what happened in that operating room, and Dr. Page won't defend himself because of professional ethics, and I wanted to speak up, but I thought I should talk to someone first.
No man makes sacrifices without reason. Whatever that reason may be, it's in itself compensation for his suffering.
But why should Dr. Page sacrifice himself for Endicott?
For the moment, that's Dr. Page's problem, not yours. He must have had good reasons, otherwise he wouldn't do it. There's nothing you can do except respect that reason.
I see. I've taken a lot of your time. Is there something I can do to repay you?
Yes. Phyllis Dexter's waiting to see me. She's pretty upset about her mother's death. Before I talk to her, I want you to take her to the little anteroom where you were taken. Ask her whatever questions you wish. Then come back to me and tell me what she says.
Just throw your coat anywhere, Phyllis. Sorry, the apartment's a little messy.
Oh, it's not messy at all. I feel much better after talking to you. And it was very kind of you to invite me over.
Not at all. I'll get some coffee on. Will you answer the door, please?
Sure.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought this was Miss Ogilvy's apartment.
It is. Come in. Who shall I tell her is calling?
Noel! Hello!
Hello, Frances.
Well, come in. Can I take your coat?
No, thanks. I can only stay a moment.
Well, perhaps I'd better go now. I had no idea you were expecting a visitor.
I wasn't. He's the last person in the world I ever expected to see here.
Well, as a matter of fact, I didn't expect to be here myself. I was out walking in the rain when suddenly, to my surprise, I found myself in front of your house.
Miss Phyllis Dexter just returned from England today.
Phyllis Dexter?
Miss Ogilvy sort of kidnapped me away from myself.
I wish she could do as much for me. That is, I've got to run along. It's an appointment.
Miss Dexter, may I introduce Mr. Walker?
If you're as nice as Miss Ogilvy, you'll be well worth knowing.
Well, thank you.
Sit down, Noel.
Well, just for a moment. I really can't stay. Did you enjoy London?
Yes, very much. Why are you staring at me?
Oh, I'm sorry. You remind me so much of someone.
Really?
Yes, someone very lovely. I never expected to meet anyone like that again. Time decides so many things, doesn't it? A split second of time, something happens. Two people meet accidentally. A knife slips. Someone takes the wrong turn. Anything. And without warning, a future has been created.
Evidently, you're a fatalist.
Hardly. I only know that things happen. Sometimes it seems with deliberate cruelty. Don't let anything happen to you or hurt you. Well, I've got to go now. Good night.
Good night.
What a strange man.
Yeah. He's a great guy. He's one of a kind. At least, he's the only one I've ever seen.
Do you think he'll call again soon?
Honey, there's no way of telling what he'll do, ever. As Dean Harcourt would say, the signals have changed. The lights are against him right now. But he'll get the green light again. He can't miss.
Ladies and gentlemen, in a moment we will return to our play, Green Light, starring Robert Young. But first, a message of hope for those in the world of pain. The inspiring promise of greater healing. Because today, in the supply room of 8,383 American hospitals, you will find penicillin. Yet only 3 years ago, the wonder drug was almost a medical rarity. The firms who devoted themselves to increasing the supplies of penicillin available struggled against many obstacles inherent in its production. Numbered among these firms was Shanley Laboratories. Although these companies have seen the realization of their goal, enough penicillin to fill essential needs, they cannot feel their work is done. Up to the present, research workers at Shanley Laboratories have developed such products as penicillin tablets and troches for administration by mouth and penicillin ointment and ophthalmic ointment. Now these men are looking forward to the perfecting and production of other and perhaps entirely different types of pharmaceuticals. It is ever the aim of Shenley Laboratories to know more of what benefits to mankind may be derived from medical research. It is our aim, too, to translate the knowledge we gain into production of more and greater aids to healing for all members of the medical profession. And now, back to our play, Green Light, starring Robert Young as Dr. Page and with Pedro de Cordova
as Dean Harcourt. Dean Harcourt, I came here to argue with you about your concept of everlasting life.
All right. Please sit down.
I want to know how you can justify needless death, greed, and the destruction of a career. I want to know how you can reconcile such waste with your irresistible onward drive.
Why?
I'm the Dr. Page who operated on Mrs. Dexter.
I see. You have a fine religion, Dr. Page.
I have none, so far as I know.
Religion has many definitions, at least in my dictionary, such as loyalty, devotion, honor.
Perhaps, but my dictionary defines it as a kind of opiate used by people with hurt sensibilities to dull them into drowsiness. A man needs more than that in his life, something he can get his hands on, something for which to live.
Or else something for which to die.
I can't even think of anything to die for.
Yes, come in. Hello, Phyllis.
Hello, Dean Harcourt. Hello, Mr. I had no idea you knew Dean Harcourt.
I didn't until a short while ago.
Then you must be in some trouble.
Is that why you're here?
Well, Dean Harcourt was my mother's friend. He's mine, too. I hoped we'd meet again. I wanted to ask you to explain some of the strange things you said last night.
I'm always saying strange things that I can't explain myself. Now, if you'll excuse me.
Well, I had no idea you two knew each other.
I'd met Mr. Walker last night.
Splendid, you two should make excellent friends.
I'm afraid Mr. Walker doesn't agree with you.
That's not it, Miss Dexter. We might have made very good friends, but we met a little too late.
My goodness, it's lunchtime already. You must be frightfully hungry, Phyllis.
I beg your pardon?
I said you must be hungry.
I'm not.
Sorry, I can't offer you any lunch. You eat, don't you?
Me? Oh, sure, I eat often.
When I was a young man, I was always taking a young lady to luncheon, particularly if I'd had some sort of misunderstanding. In fact, I was known as Hungry Harcourt.
Oh. You win, Dean. Shall we have lunch, Miss Dexter?
Let's.
Good. You two run along and have a good time. And by the way, if you have no other plans, have dinner with me next Friday, both of you.
I'd love to.
So would I.
And bring Miss Ogilvy with you.
Yes, I'll ask her. Goodbye.
See you Friday.
About 8.
Goodbye.
You're a strange man.
Why do you say that?
One moment you're so friendly, and the next you... Why did you say we met too late?
Let's sit down on this bench a moment.
All right.
Last night, when I met you, it was like... Well, it was almost like the beginning of a world for me. I don't know how to explain it very well, except that for a moment, it was like the dawn coming up after a long, dark night. It was as though, in finding you, I'd found an answer to everything, to every heartache, to every loneliness, to every torment. I looked at you and I wanted to say, if you will spend your days with me, I'll have everything I've ever dreamed about.
You thought all that?
Yes.
Do you know what I thought? I thought, in some strange way, in one look, with one smile, this man has put his hand upon my heart and made it his. And I thought, this is the beginning of many things.
It was the beginning, but it was also the ending.
The ending? Why?
Because your name is Phyllis Dexter. And mine is Newell Page, Dr. Newell Page.
Newell Page? Page?
Yes, that's why I didn't want to see you again. At least not until I could find some way of telling you. You have no reason for hating me.
No reason? You killed my mother.
No.
Well, then who did? You might at least have been man enough to accept the blame.
You don't understand. It was not
I
that.
I think I do understand. Goodbye, Dr. Page.
I can't understand why he isn't here.
No, he's usually very prompt.
Well, he'll be along. Did you two have a nice luncheon the other day, Phyllis?
We didn't go to lunch.
Oh?
Why not? What happened?
Nothing.
You're not telling the truth.
You lied to me. You introduced Dr. Page as Mr. Walker.
I see.
Why?
Because I saw no reason to upset you or him. I'd do anything I could to make things easier for him.
Well, why should he have things made easier for him?
Phyllis, you're...
Don't say it! Don't say it! I'm sick of philosophies and sermons and parables. I'm a human being. I have a right to hate or love.
Phyllis, what did Page do to you?
He killed my mother.
There's something else. Something within you that's been killed.
He lied to me.
You love him.
I don't. I despise him. He didn't even have the decency to take the blame himself.
Did he name another doctor?
Oh, no. How could he?
That's right. How could he? He's too decent, too honest to break the rules he plays by.
Why do you say that?
Tell her, Frances.
No. No, I'll play according to Page's rules now. He didn't have to listen to sermons to become good. He was born that way. He'll always be that way, no matter what happens to him.
I don't understand.
You will, eventually. You see, my dear, until you have faith, you don't really love. Frances.
Yes.
I've learned much from you today. Thank you.
Will you excuse me from dinner, please, Dean Harcourt?
Where are you going?
To find him.
I'll answer the door.
Telegram for Dean Harcourt. Sign here.
Yes, thank you. It's for you.
Oh.
What? What is it?
I'm afraid you'll have to go a long way, Phyllis. He's in Montana.
Montana?
This wire's from a Dr. Lane. He says Newell asked him to wire and explain that he couldn't come to dinner. And he says he's very ill. He deliberately let a wood tick bite him so that he could infect himself with spotted fever.
Spotted fever?
He wants to be used as a human guinea pig to test the vaccine.
Oh, no!
Come on, we've got to get Dr. Endicott in a hurry. Dr. Endicott, Dr. Page is with John Lane.
On Boone Mountain?
Yes.
I won't have him in that pest hole. He'll die like all the rest.
He may be dying now. He's down with spotted fever. He gave it to himself to test a vaccine.
My fault if he dies, my fault. He mustn't die. I won't let him. We'll charter a plane. Get out there right away.
What's my temperature?
It was 102.9 an hour ago. How do you feel?
Not bad. Kind of groggy. Pain in the lower quadrant of the abdomen. Make a note of it. I want to see how long it lasts.
Why did you ever do such a fool thing? Deliberately infecting yourself, risking your life.
If I die, I don't particularly care. And you'll have learned something. There, seems to be a congestion developing in the lungs. How about taking a blood count? I'd like to see if I'm losing any resistance.
Hello, Dr. Lane. How is he?
Is he conscious?
Yes, but he's sinking.
We'll go right in. Not you, Miss Dexter. We don't want to upset him.
All right.
Hello, Newell.
Hello, Dr. Endicott. Francis, we can use you. John's getting sick of keeping my chart.
We aren't going to let you die.
You won't have anything to say about it if that vaccine doesn't work. At the present, I share the same place in society with the guinea pig. John?
Yes, Newell.
Make that blood count. Watch my temperature closely. I'm becoming stuporous.
He's unconscious.
No, not yet. Keep your nerve, Francis. You're an old hand at this sort of thing.
Yes, Dr. Page.
What's my temperature?
104.1.
Heart action. Weakening. John.
Better not talk, Newell.
Take another blood count. Temperature 104.1. Should break before it reaches 105. Can't take 105.
Francis, if he dies,
I will have killed him just as I killed Mrs. Dexter.
What did you say, Dr. Endicott?
I was to blame, Phyllis. I was at fault, and I never should have let him take the blame. He's got to live. If there's any justice at all, he's got to live.
Now you know what you needed to know, Phyllis.
No. I haven't really needed to know anything since the moment when I knew I loved him.
His temperature's up to 104.2.
I'll go right in. Temperature, last four readings, steady, 104.2.
Dr. Endicott, can't you do something? We can't just sit here and let him die.
There's nothing we can do for him now except pray.
Francis! Phyllis! Dr. Endicott! His temperature. Look at his temperature.
103.1.
It's licked. Phyllis, it's licked. He's going to live. He's going to be all right.
Dr. Endicott, there's a place for you out here.
No, you fellas have already done the most important work on spotted fever. You won't need me here.
But the people will need great doctors to help them through their birth. Doctors who haven't forgotten their oath to their fellow men. To share my substance with him and to relieve his necessities when required.
I guess I lost sight of what being a doctor means for a while, Newell. But I think I've got the green light now myself.
You've been listening to Dean Harcourt, too.
Yes, I've been listening. And I'm going to stay out here.
Newell, a letter just came from Baytree.
Yes, yes, I wrote them explaining everything.
Holy smoke! They've appointed me chief surgeon at Baytree.
Oh, I'm so proud of you, darling.
Oh, Phyllis. Phyllis, how rich I am. How fortunate, how lucky, how happy, how grateful. There aren't enough adjectives to say it.
I don't like to interrupt love's young dream, but it's time for Dean Harcourt.
Oh, the depth of the riches of the wisdom and knowledge of God. How unsearchable are his judgments and his ways past finding. For who has known the mind of the Lord? Or who hath been his counselor? Or who hath first given to him, and it shall be recompensed unto him again? For of him and through him and in him are all things. To him be glory forever. Amen.
In a moment, we'll bring back our star, Robert Young. Ladies and gentlemen, Shanley Laboratories, maker of penicillin Shanley, would like to remind you that the American standard of health is higher than that of any other country in the world. We feel sure you will agree that the man who has done most to make this situation true is the American doctor. Shanley Laboratories pledges to do all within our power to aid America's physicians in their work of maintaining America's high standards of health. And now, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Robert Young.
Ladies and gentlemen, to sum up the spirit of this Shanley Laboratories program, this beautiful and simple prayer of the physician, written centuries ago by Maimonides, seems to me to be apt and fitting. The eternal providence has appointed me to watch over the life and death of all thy creatures. May I always see in the patient a fellow creature in pain. Grant me strength and opportunity always to extend the domain of my craft. This is the prayer of the physician. It is ages old, and yet today it is as new as the hope for a peaceful way of life for all the world. May we invite you to listen again next week at the same time when Shenley Laboratories presents Men in White, starring Robert Taylor. A great star and a great story. Good night. Green Light by Lloyd C. Douglas was produced and directed by Bill Lawrence and was broadcast through the courtesy of Warner Brothers, who this year is celebrating the 20th anniversary of Sound Pictures. It was a Gene Holloway adaptation. Robert Young will soon be seen in the Hal B. Wallace Paramount production, The Searching Wind. This is Frank Graham speaking for Shenley Laboratories, producers of penicillin Shenley, and inviting you to listen to the Encore Theater next Tuesday at the same time when you will hear Robert Taylor in Men in White. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Demonstration, okay? Then listen to the Mystery Playhouse. Scotland Yard in London, the London of the early 1900s. A man was found dead, strangled to death, in a village called St. Mark's Priory, and Scotland Yard is investigating the murder. Chief Inspector Tanner is in his office, and he's discussing the situation with his assistant, Sergeant Tutty.
Well, Tutty?
Well, this bloke what was killed was the chauffeur for Lord Lebanon. His name was William Studd. He was returning from a fancy dress ball and was strangled on the way. Nobody hated him, and there's no clue as to who killed him.
Fancy dress ball, eh? What was he wearing?
Aha! He was dressed in Indian clothes, Tanner. And that's where my theory comes in. It was Dr. Amersham who found the chauffeur at 2 o'clock in the morning. Now, what was Dr. Amersham doing at 2 in the morning in the Priory Field?
It's your theory, Sergeant. Suppose you tell me.
Well...
Chief Constable Tanner. Lord Lebanon. Right. Lord Lebanon is outside. Go bring him in.
Here's Lord Lebanon, Inspector.
Hello. I hope I'm not an awful nuisance.
No, not at all, Lord Lebanon. I'm Chief Inspector Tanner. What can I do for you?
Well, Inspector Tanner, the whole thing is very vulgar, and when one's mother's involved... Well, everything was all right while my father was alive. Shocking invalid. Never left his room for 15 years.
Your visit here concerns your father?
Not exactly. I'm just starting at the beginning, you know. When Father died, I should have come back from India. But then Amersham came out after me, wanted me to take my seat in the House of Lords. Silly.
What? But you came back?
Yes. To find my mother was expecting me to marry Isla Crane. It's deuced awkward.
Awkward?
She's terribly nice, but there's something odd about her.
Odd?
She's been frightened since that infernal murder. Why, my dear fellow, she walks in her sleep.
You say she's frightened, Lord Lebanon?
Of what? I shouldn't be surprised if it's that American footman my mother hired. A strapping big fellow. He lurks.
He does what?
Lurks. You know, you pop out of your room and there he is, lurking in the hall.
Well, why don't you fire him? You're the master of the house.
Oh, yes, I'm the master in a way. Still, it's rather difficult when a fellow has a mother. But I don't want any fuss. I'll probably marry Isla in spite of her walking in her sleep.
What about this Dr. Amersham?
Oh. Well, you might as well know. Dr. Amersham is a man I dislike intensely.
Is he a friend of your mother's?
I suppose so, in a way. But he doesn't like me. He doesn't like Isla, doesn't like anybody. And I'll tell you something else about him. When he was in India, a woman was killed in his bungalow. Indian woman. Beautiful gal. Strangled? Can you tell me any more about it? She was strangled with some sort of scarf. Oh, there was a terrible row about it. But he got out of it.
I see. Lord Lebanon, why exactly have you come to see me?
Well, I'll be perfectly frank with you. I'm frightened. I don't want to make a scene, but at the same time, I don't want to die.
Aren't you possibly exaggerating?
I don't know whether I am or whether I'm not, but there's something going on. And I don't understand it. Honestly, I do wish you'd come down and look into it.
All right, Lord Lebanon. We'll be down the first thing tomorrow morning.
It's a good thing you're taking me with you to Mark's Priory, Tanner. As I always say, you can't go wrong when you've got the coolest head in the yard along
quiet,
with you.
Quiet, Tuddy. Here we are.
Mark's Priory Castle. Can you imagine a lightweight brain like Lord Lebanon having all this and £40,000 a year? Now, if I had that
you'd
money,
spend
I'd...
it all on loose liquor and aged women. We're going in now, Tuddy. Mind your manners.
Yes, sir?
Chief Inspector Tanner and Sergeant Tuddy of Scotland Yard. We're here to see Lady Lebanon and the household.
Lady Lebanon's in the drawing room. I'll announce you.
Wait a minute. You're not the butler.
No, sir. Butler's busy just now. I'm the doorman.
Footman, eh? Then you must be the American, Gilda.
Yes, sir.
How long have you been here, Gilda?
8 years.
I believe you have an account at the London and Provincial Bank, haven't you?
Yes, Inspector.
Very unusual, isn't it? For a footman to have an account in a London bank.
Some of us are very thrifty.
So I noticed. But isn't it rather a large balance?
£3,000 or £4,000. I've bought some good stocks now and then.
What is your salary here?
Pretty good one. Her ladyship is generous.
Well, I'll want to talk to you later, Gilda.
Sure. Anytime. Now I'll announce you to her ladyship.
Never mind. I'll announce myself. Come on, Toddy. That seems to be the drawing room ahead. Lady Lebanon?
Yes?
I'm Chief Inspector Tanner, Scotland Yard. This is Sergeant Tuddy, who was down here 2 days ago.
How do you do? This is Dr. Amersham, my physician.
How do you do? How do you do, Inspector?
Why are you here, Inspector?
I must remind your ladyship that your son chauffeur was murdered only a few days ago. It will be necessary for me to question all of you. Tuddy, you take care of the servants.
Right, sir.
Lady Lebanon, I would like to see your son and his fiancée, as well as you and the doctor.
Very well. Dr. Amersham, will you step upstairs and ask Isla to come down?
Glad to. If the inspector won't read something criminal into my actions, you never know about these police.
Oh, before you go, Doctor, I believe you spent some time in India.
Oh, yes, yes. I'm practically a colonial.
And I believe there was some incident of a native girl being strangled in your bungalow?
A very unfortunate incident, Inspector. I'm sure you must be interested in the police work on the case. Sometime, perhaps, I'll tell you all about it. Now, if you'll pardon me, I'll see if I can find Miss Craig.
That clever man. Is there anything you wish to tell me, Lady Lebanon?
I knew very little about the poor chauffeur. The servants can probably tell you the things you have to know. I suppose you want to look over the castle?
Yes, of course.
Are you interested in blazonry, Inspector? The coat of arms you see in here represents an eternity. The Lebanon line stands unbroken for 1,200 years. It would be a pity were it to die out.
I'm sure it would. How long have you known Dr. Amersham, Lady Lebanon?
Many years, since before my husband died.
I was aware of that. In fact, I noticed that your husband's death certificate was signed by Dr. Amersham.
Yes, it was. I believe you said you wished to see my son, Inspector. I'll go and tell him.
When constabulary duties to be done, the policeman...
I say, that's rather jolly. I didn't know policemen could sing.
Oh, good morning, Lord Lebanon. I see your mother found you.
My mother? No, I haven't seen her. I suppose it's beastly of me, but I'm always rather glad when I don't see her. I say, I'm awfully glad you've come down. Have you met Amersham?
I haven't met him.
He's a nasty piece of work, isn't he? I loathe him. You know, it just occurred to me, this chauffeur chap of ours might have been strangled by a scarf like that Indian gal I told you about.
Wouldn't surprise me if you were right.
It wouldn't? You know, Inspector, I've always thought I had a talent for that sort of thing, snooping around for clues.
You have?
Yes, indeed. It would never do, though, I suppose. The trouble is, I can't stand the sight of blood. It unnerves me for days. Ghastly, isn't it?
Oh, I don't know. I imagine there are many people who can't stand the sight of blood.
You think so? I say, you will look into this, Amersham, won't you? Things are pretty rum around here, and I'm sure that he's at the bottom of it.
Willie, what were you saying to the inspector?
Nothing, Mother. I'm just remarking that Dr. Amersham is a bounder.
Well, nonsense, Willie. I'll not have you talking that way about Dr. Amersham. Where were you? I was looking everywhere for you.
You couldn't have looked very hard. I was in the den all morning.
It seems to be taking Dr. Amersham quite a while to bring Miss Crane down. I wonder...
Well, he has been a little long, but I'm sure they'll be here any minute.
If you ask me...
Tyler, what can be the matter?
Dashed odd girl.
We'll see. Come on.
Tyler, what's the meaning of this nonsense?
It's up there on the stairs. Dead. It's so terrible. Black and contorted. As though he'd been choked to death.
Who, Miss Crane? Who is dead?
Dr. Amersham.
You wanted to see me, Lady Lebanon?
Yes, I did, Isla. What is the matter with you? All you do is fidget and look frightened.
I don't know. I heard the police saying that Dr. Amersham and the chauffeur were both strangled with a scarf. They found red threads on their throats.
What's frightening about that?
Well, I opened the drawer of your desk this afternoon and I found red scarf there.
My dear child, you're dreaming. Which drawer?
This one.
You see, there's nothing there. You mustn't let these things get on your nerves the way you do.
These things? How can you speak so lightly about it? Two men are killed here and you act so calmly. I can't go on staying in this awful place. I can't.
But you will, Isla, dear. I sent your mother her quarterly check last week and just had a letter from her this morning. She's so happy to be secure after all the hard times she's been through.
Oh, don't. Please don't. You know I wouldn't be here a day if it weren't for her. If she knew what I'm doing, she'd rather starve than have me go on.
Don't be stupid. For heaven's sake, don't be hysterical. I can't stand hysterical women. They have unhealthy children, and you must have healthy children after you're married to Willie. Yes, Gilda?
It's a gentleman from Scotland Yard. I've finished showing him over the house, and they...
We want to see you, Lady Lebanon.
Oh, have you been to the castle already? Inspector Tanner?
Every room except one.
The lumber room, my lady.
On the first floor. One of the best positions in the house. That's a queer place for a lumber room.
We call it the lumber room. It's really a place where I keep a few valuables.
Your man has the key?
No, I never open that room. Inspector Tanner, I'll tell you the truth. That is the room where my husband died. It hasn't been opened since that day.
But I'm sure I've seen it open, Lady Lebanon.
You are quite mistaken, Isla. You must be overwrought. Go to your room.
Yes, Lady Lebanon.
I'm sorry, my lady, but I must insist on the room being open.
But why, Inspector? Surely there's nothing there that will interest you.
There might be. I'm looking for a collection of silk scarves, and I want to find them before somebody else gets strangled.
Ridiculous.
I don't think so. Incidentally, we discovered that a scarf, perhaps the one used on Dr. Amersham, was burned this afternoon in a stove in the kitchen. Would you know anything about it?
If anything has been burned, I haven't the least idea who burned it or what it was.
I'm afraid I'm at fault, Inspector. I found some odd bits of silk on the carpet and burned them.
Why, of course, Gilda. I was cutting out a doll's dress for the village bazaar.
Doll dresses? Look, Chief, just give me a few minutes.
Not now, Toddy, not now. Lady Lebanon, It strikes me that you're not very anxious to have the murder of your friend cleared up.
Dr. Amersham was not a friend of mine.
So the fact that he was murdered within a few yards of this room really doesn't matter?
Aren't you being rather insolent, Inspector Tanner?
I suppose I am. But your own attitude is rather peculiar. If he wasn't a friend of yours, what was he doing here?
He came to see me as a doctor.
At your request?
No, he just dropped in.
So early in the morning, an odd hour for dropping in?
I had a touch of neuritis in my arm.
Oh, yes, neuritis. But you didn't send for him?
No.
He just guessed that you had neuritis and dropped in. Very convenient type of doctor to have.
I'm not interested in your conclusions, Inspector Tanner.
You will be in some of them. And Lady Lebanon, I intend to see that room, which you choose to call the lumber room. If not voluntarily, then with a court order.
This is an outrage. No magistrate in this county would grant it.
Then I'll go to the Home Secretary.
You won't be able to reach him until tomorrow, Chief.
So, my home will belong to me until tomorrow, at least?
Maybe. You don't seem to realize or want to that there's a murder around. I know the identity of the murderer, Lady Lebanon, but I haven't got the proof. It may be in that room you refuse to open.
Impossible.
Not so impossible. Sergeant Totty and I are staying here this evening. I suggest that you reconsider and give us the key to the lumber room. It may save somebody's life.
Day this has been, Chief. I'm glad the household's getting tucked into their beds. I could do with a bit of sleep myself.
Yeah, we'll go to bed ourselves, Tully, as soon as we're sure that everything's quiet. We can step into the library for a last smoke while we're waiting.
Mm. Look, Chief, there on the floor. Why, he's got another one.
I see her. Miss Crane. Thank heavens he wasn't successful this time, Tully. She's still alive, although she'll have a sore throat for a while.
Here's the scarf he did it with, too.
I think she's coming around.
Hello. I say, what's wrong? What's wrong?
Our murderer tried to get Miss Crane.
Oh, I say, poor girl. Is she done for?
You know, she'll be all right in a moment.
No.
There, there, there now, Miss Crane. It's Inspector Tanner. You've had a nasty shock, but you're not hurt.
My throat.
Who did it, Miss Crane?
I don't know. I was just standing here and suddenly then. A scarf was whipped around my neck. I couldn't see who. I think it was...
It's all right. That's all right, Miss Crane. You tell us the rest tomorrow. Now it's upstairs to bed for you. Best take a sedative. Toddy, you help Miss Crane up to her room and get her maid for her.
Right, sir. Here, just lean on me, ma'am.
Thank you, Inspector. Poor girl. Of course, she is a bit odd. But she doesn't deserve to die that way.
Well, thank heavens she didn't die.
I'm glad. Don't you think it's about time my line was wiped out, Inspector?
Your line? I'm afraid I don't understand you.
This sort of thing's been going on for years. Ask my mother. She's got all their dates, all their pedigrees. The Lebanons have always been somewhat off. My father was more than somewhat. He spent 15 years in the old Lord's room. As mad as a hatter.
Guessed that.
But he never strangled anybody. The first time I saw it done was in Pune. A little fellow slipped up behind a big hulking man and... Fascinating. Yes. I tried it on a girl, an Indian girl. She went out like that. Extraordinary, isn't it?
Very. I suppose one uses a scarf like this one.
You do understand. I brought back dozens of these scarves from India. I'm not a big fellow, but I'm awfully strong. Feel my arm. It's rather a lot. People never think I have the strength. Even Gilda doesn't guess.
Gilda?
He's not really a footman, you know. He's sort of... Well, he looks after me. You understand?
Yes. That's what I thought.
And that room my mother wouldn't show you. Well, it's all padded, you know. Rubber cushions all around the walls. I have to go there when I... when I realize things.
You mean when you imagine things?
When I realize things, I know what I'm saying. When I'm quite well, I don't realize things. It's only when I get excited that my brain becomes clear. Don't touch me.
I just wanted a light for my cigarette.
Huh? Oh, I'm awfully sorry. Here. Are you friend or foe?
A friend, of course. Now, why did you... Why were you so unkind to the chauffeur?
Stud? Oh, I'm awfully sorry about that. He was such a good fellow. But I'm afraid of Indians. One of them tried to kill me. They were very angry about that girl. I didn't know about this beastly masquerade ball in the village. I thought the chauffeur was an Indian.
And Dr. Amersham?
I didn't like him. He had my mother under his thumb. He knew about my realizing things, you see, and he blackmailed her. I'll show you something. Swear you won't tell anybody.
I swear.
Here. It's a gun, loaded. I took it from Gilda's room this evening. It's the first one I've been able to get a hold of since I came back from India.
Very nice. Would you mind not pointing it at me? It might go off.
So it might. Sometimes I think I should turn it on myself. Wipe out the whole silly line. I wonder where Gilda put her.
Put who?
Isla. She was looking awfully like that Indian girl this afternoon. I went behind her and put my arms around her. Did she hear her run down the stairs? She knows. That's why she's frightened of me. She came downstairs the night I smashed up this place. I don't remember doing it, but I suppose I must have. That was the night I nearly got Amersham. And last night when I did get him, she saw me coming back into the house. And I'm terribly strong. You wouldn't think so, would you?
Oh, yes, I would. You know, when you were at my office in Scotland Yard, I said to myself, this fellow is very strong.
Did you really? You are smart, aren't you? I say, I worried them tonight. I didn't drink my bromide. There are lots of ways of getting out of that room of mine. They don't know it, but I do. I fool them lots of times.
Yes, I expect you fool them pretty often. Well, I'm going to bed.
Oh, no, you're not going to bed. You're pretending that you're not scared. But you are. You see, I frighten people.
I'm not frightened.
No?
I'll be sensible and give me that gun.
No.
If you want to fool around with a thing like that.
Well, there are lots of things I could do with this. I could end the line with this. Here comes my mother. We'll ask her.
Billy, give me that gun.
No, I won't. I've always wanted a pistol. I've asked you one dozens of times.
Billy, now wait.
You're going to give me that gun, old fellow?
No, you don't touch me. Don't come near me.
Hey, Billy, look, he's going to stop him. Somebody stop him.
Too late, mother.
Well, Inspector?
He's dead. Poor devil.
10 centuries of Lebanon's. 1,000 years of greatness gone out like a candle in the wind.
Patty.
Yes, sir.
Get Scotland Yard. Tell them the Lebanon case is closed.
Oh, if that Lord Lebanon isn't a disappointment. After so neatly strangling all those other people, he had to go and spoil a perfect record by shooting himself. Well, don't go, please. Don't go. They're rehearsing our next performance in a green room. Follow me, please. Come. Come.
Are you being sent, young man?
Science. I'm brain delivered. Oh, listen to this. It's murder. Oh, want it.
Well, thank you. Do you like that record you just played?
Oh, it's terrible. Corny. Too commercial. Are those the records you want to hear?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what's the matter with them?
Oh, long hairs. Why don't you get out of your long underwear? So long.
Hey, was that an insult?
No, dear, no. Just jive talk. Play one of our records, Mickey.
Okay, darling. Hey, Nora, what's Gut Bucket?
Oh, I don't know, darling, but it sounds to me like some new kind of girdle. Sit down, dear.
Hey, what kind of stuff is that?
Beethoven's Romance, dear. It's about time you developed a taste for good music.
What's the matter with my taste? I like to see everything Dinosaur sings.
You should learn to appreciate the higher forms, dear.
Hey,
Simon. Oh, Mr. Bailey. Nicky, I want you to meet Mr. Benjamin Bailey, the proprietor of the Cadenza Record Shop.
Pleased to meet you, Mr. Charles.
Oh, how you do?
Just call me Beethoven Bunny like everybody else does.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Mrs. Charles, shall I start lecturing at him?
Oh, please, Benny.
You know, is this some kind of a plot?
Uh-huh.
Now, Mr. Charles, now you're just listening to a hunk of music called Romance by Ludwig von Beethoven, which is written in Andante. Which means not too fast, but don't fall asleep, you get it?
Hey, Benny, where'd you learn about music?
Oh, in my youth, I was the first piccolo player in the Sing Sing Philharmonic Orchestra. Now you take that album there, Shostakovich's Sixth Symphony. Shostakovich was influenced by Prokofiev, Stravinsky, Rachmaninoff, Rimsky-Korsakov, Glazunov, Mussorgsky, and Tchaikovsky. So what happens? So Shostakovich makes with the notes, and if you spend an ear... It sounds a little like Prokofiev, Stravinsky, Rachmaninoff, Rimsky-Korsakov, and Tchaikovsky. Now, they're not to be confused with Beethoven, Bach, Brahms, Mozart, and Papa Haydn, who are of the German school, as against the Russian school. Two nations which are at war today. Which is something to think about, ain't that, Mrs. Charles?
Oh, yes. Yes, it certainly bears thinking about.
So to get along with my suppression. Now, Beethoven was carrying the torch for a hot little tomato called Countess Guicciardi. Now, hark ye, how the great violinist Freddy Fatkin plays this passage. It's sheer perspiration.
Well, what's the matter with Freddy? Did he run out of perspiration?
No, the record stopped. Something messed up this phonograph.
Well, won't it go?
No, it's dead.
Why don't we push it away from the wall, Benny?
Well, what killed it, Nicky? Fradkin's playing?
No, baby. It was murdered.
Oh, phonographs don't get murdered. They die natural death.
Well, here's the bullet, Nora. It smashed the motor.
Well, now, who'd want to murder a phonograph?
Must be some torpedo who hates music.
Bullet came through that wall. There's the hole. What's on the other side of this wall, Benny?
Another boot like this. There's just a thin partition of expensive soundproof junk between the boots.
Someone in that other booth fired that bullet. Come on.
I bet it's one of my competitors trying to ruin my business.
Well, there's the door to the other booth. Oh.
Steady, baby.
Oh, but look, Nicky, look, that woman.
Benny, turn off that record.
All right.
Is she dead?
Uh-huh. Three bullet wounds in the head. Benny, you'd better call the police.
Yeah, I'll phone right now.
Nicky, do you think the killer's still around?
No, darling. If he was smart enough to turn on that record to cover the noise of the shots, he's smart enough to make a quick getaway.
He must be a very queer killer, dear. He left his lipstick behind.
Well, what do you mean?
This lipstick I just found. It's called Passion Smear.
Oh, but that probably belongs to the corpse.
Uh-uh. It's a different shade. You see? They don't match her lips.
Yeah. Hey, listen, Nora, you wait here.
Where are you going?
I want to speak to headquarters. This looks like a case for Inspector Gallagher. I'll be back in a minute.
I wonder if... Oh... I didn't notice that before. This is interesting. Nicky, did you... Oh, who turned off the lights?
Oh, let go of me. Let go of you. Help me, someone. It's the killer. Nicky. Nicky.
Sounds exciting, doesn't it? Murder in a record shop. Why don't you try to be on hand for our next performance when we present Nick and Nora Charles in The Adventures of the Thin Man? This is Peter Lorre, closing the doors of the Mystery Playhouse. Good night, sweetheart.
The Relic Radio Show for this week. If you want to hear more Relic Radio, just visit the website at relicradio.com. You'll find all the other podcasts, including this one, links to past episodes, links to our forum, Shoutcast stream, everything else Relic Radio, a way to donate if you'd like to help make sure it all keeps coming. Thanks to those who have donated. Thanks for joining me today. Back again next Tuesday with another episode of The Relic Radio Show. Relic Radio Show is produced by and for relicradio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.